You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
One of my favorite things in this world are when, like, your aunt, your uncle, or just somebody who's definitely not from here and maybe doesn't speak English puts on a shirt or a hoodie. They don't know what says on the front.
Ah, gotcha.
It's one of my favorite things. I walked outside. I parked the car a block away across the street to doing construction. And there was an older, what I think might be Asian dude. I couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. But I know he doesn't speak, or maybe he does, because he had a hoodie on that said, "It's bitch o'clock."
Hell yeah.
I was just like, yo.
Yeah.
I don't think my man knows what's on this shirt.
Is it like, is he the bitch in this scenario?
You know,
like,
maybe like he what? Does, and it's his way of letting the boys in the yard know, today's not the day.
Do not test me.
No. I woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, and I'm not having.
I've never understood that, regardless of gender, race, age. Just like, why do you have to announce to the world that I don't want to be spoken to, or
like
that being your entire personality,
bro?
It's under the umbrella of the live, laugh, love, right?
But to me, it's the economy of the Jersey Shore. You know what I mean? Those shops that sell.
We don't have to degrade the Jersey Shore just to get your point across.
I think it's more of the economy of like dissatisfied corporate workers, people who are like unhappy with their jobs and don't want to be sent an email that says "per my last email" or things. Like that, it's like last email culture to me.
It's people who are really strong about unions. You know what I mean? Those
who wear those shirts, or like people who wear "don't talk to me until my coffee" or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is these are the Facebook ads you get. Yeah. You
know right, I mean? Exactly. Like, okay, you have a caffeine problem.
You think this dude got a Facebook ad and he was like, "Bro, maybe he misunderstands it," and he's like, "Yo, ladies, come talk to me. Yo, it's bitch o'clock over here." You think that's what it is?
I always got time for you.
Damn, shorty, she left months ago. I got no couch and nothing to do tonight.
Hello, everyone.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
What's up? Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
And today we are joined by a man who is missed in the Levitard universe, who is missed in the Meadowlark world. And he is currently the man has every job in American soccer that you could ever want. I mean, he is an announcer. He's a commentator for CBS. My man is covering Champions League. It's wild that we can just text him while he's on the broadcast and be like, "Yo, Witty, say this about me. You know, give me a shout out."
Or be like, "Yo, you bugging. Yo, why are you working? It's bitch o'clock."
That backstory you told on Julian Brandt was wrong.
But we are joined by none other than our dear friend, Chris Whittingham. Whitty, what's up, brother?
What's up, gents? It's good to finally be in person here in the studio see the surrounds.
You've joined us remotely, calling in from wherever in the world that you are, calling matches for either CBS or MLS Season Pass. But now you're here in person, and we can finally just you are actually always with us on our board.
You don't know where I'm from.
Not that one.
I'm from dog.
Hit him in the penis.
That's what. There's eight sounds here. There's eight sounds here, and that made the crack.
Yes, it did.
Actually, we have like multiple.
Oh,
pages.
Okay. Oh, I see.
But you're on the first page.
But you're on the penis. Okay, so it is it's an honor to have you be, you know, at some point we're going to try to get you to recreate it. Who knows? Right. But, I mean, I know.
That ship has sailed, sadly.
I'll punch Christian in the penis. and then you into the mic, sir.
We can, it'll be proper commentary.
It will be an accurate reflection of events.
You're not being a show pony. You're actually going to be doing it.
You're going to be working. So, look, I you've talked about this ad nauseum, but you haven't talked about that on this show. So, you know, the fact that this is our new segment, Behind the Button. Yeah. to explain where the sounds come from. Of
are you
that
getting Micah Richards on to talk about You Don't Know Where I'm From?
Yeah,
though?
Yeah, right, right.
We'll get everybody.
Well, then we got to get.
Oh my f***ing God! Major League Soccer!
And that's giving Joe. Yeah, right? So it hit him in the penis. Obviously, it was a game.
Iconic moment.
Iconic moment. Everybody immediately was just like, this is one of the best moments in Major League Soccer commentary.
This is what we want from Major League Soccer. When people take it too serious, like, look, you got to have a little American exceptionalism.
But I would argue that this was witty taking it serious.
It was.
Yes, because, who was it? It was Gallese, right?
Gallese for Orlando City. Against the Galaxy.
Yes, and there was an incident, and he got hit in the nether regions. We use euphemisms when we're talking about this.
Which was my whole thing.
If this was England, they'd have some weird, like, oh, his bean bag was rattled. You know?
I mean, this started from working on Levitard Show. So basically, like, obviously you guys are comedians. I'm not. But, you know, you'd have to, like, kind of come up with material. So you'd have to show up and have something to say. I was watching something, and this is what I had. And so I was watching a college basketball game, and it was another one of those got hit downstairs. You know, took one in the bed area. we're dancing around this. And I always just thought it was cowardly for grown men to an audience of adults, ostensibly. And even if there are children in the audience, you're not saying a bad word.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was in like fourth grade sex ed class, they were like, just repeated the word over and over again to like try and like by the 15th time not have everyone laugh.
Right.
But we can't, I guess, be trusted as a people to not laugh and turn it into viral moments that may or may not have made me thought I was ruining my career. Yeah. The observation was just like, why can't we just be adults about this?
Right.
Why can't we just use the medically correct term to describe something that we have all seen? And yes, it kind of makes us giggle, but let's just say the word. And so the first opportunity I got, it was more like the devil on the shoulder. It was just like, if you don't say this, people are going to think you're a coward. I did the whole thing on the show. So the next game that I did where it happened, I said it. And honestly, my second thought was also, I don't know, it's happening on a Twitter broadcast and like SAP on Univision, maybe I'll get away with it. And I did not get away with And so now it is forever immortalized.
That's how we learned to use these buttons.
Yeah?
Was that moment right there.
we gotta figure out how to get this button
to work.
So it is as regularly used in the show as possible.
Yeah, amazing. Pretty much. It also fits right in line with our show.
Right.
Yeah. Without a doubt. That moment was made for this board, for this program. So thank you for your contributions.
No problem
To the game and to the Cooligans.
But now you're living in the Eastern Seaboard, right? You're up here now.
Yep.
You were in Miami before that. Where are you from again?
I'm from Miami. I was born in Hialeah.
You're from Hialeah. It's crazy. Yeah. He's basically Cuban. how do you like the East Coast? How do you like it up here?
Yeah. I must confess, the winter was not for me.
Yeah.
Not my favorite time that I've ever had in my life. I'm so, just like, it's
Witty's
so...
weak.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, she's
fair
weak.
Fair enough. I really come to enjoy it. And now that, like, things have turned and it's no longer cold, it's gorgeous. So I enjoy coming into the city. I enjoy living in Connecticut. And I've kind of mostly, on my MLS season pass assignments, been in the Acela corridor. So it's been, like, D.C., Philly, New York, New England.
You're doing
and
trains?
That's basically it. Yeah, basically.
That's kind of wild, no?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't expect that. Did you expect that?
It's wild just to use the term to Witty. You doing trains, Witty?
Whoa. What are we getting into?
What kind of program has this become? Hey, Connecticut changed you, Witty.
Damn. How many people hit him in the penis?
But no, that's amazing, man. Yeah. It's just a great journey, obviously, seeing you week in and week out.
Do you have like an East Coast thing you do that you couldn't do in Miami? Is there like
Is Miami not the East Coast? I call it the East Coast.
Miami's not the East Coast.
Right. It's its own thing. Miami's not even Florida. It's its own thing.
Miami's Miami.
It's its own thing.
Also, you consider South Carolina the East Coast?
I mean,
like Charleston, South Carolina.
Hurricanes, bro.
No, the East Coast stops at D.C.
Oh, all right.
In terms of that, that's the southernmost point of the East Coast.
Yeah, when you say East Coast.
In here, that's an absolutely insane take. The entire Eastern Seaboard, that's why they call it
the
East Coast.
Culturally East Coast.
Correct.
Yes, okay, if we're just talking maps.
Yeah. Right, if you're a Midwestern politician and you say, those East Coasters are out of touch, you're not talking about people from South Carolina.
Above?
You're talking about D.C. and above.
There's another way to do it, but I don't want to bring it up.
We have to define an endpoint, because I don't think that East Coast Coasters are like Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. They are also technically underwater.
Those are Canadians.
They are not traditionally East Coast. They're not traditionally East Coasters. Honestly, not far away.
They're not loyal Americans, but I guess it would. New England is still considered.
Yeah, I would say
the
Boston,
bottom end of New England is East Coast.
Boston.
Yeah.
So the East Coast goes from Boston to D.C.
Yeah, if you're from one of those wacky states, like Vermont, New Hampshire, and I don't know which one's which on the map.
Yeah.
They look like they're 69. I have no idea what's going on there.
One is top down and the other is bottom up.
Hey, you pick which one's your favorite.
Isn't New Hampshire the
tag yourself on a map,
their
fellas.
State slogan is live free or die. Isn't that New Hampshire? They have like a uncomfortable one where you're like, all right, I didn't know people got
Are you just yes-handing him right now, or do you actually know that?
No, I haven't. I know one of them is.
I think
it's a George Carlin bit, actually.
It's New Hampshire.
It is New Hampshire.
Okay. Oh, wow.
See,
good show.
So it was a safe yes-and. Right?
I feel like that would be like a really good thing to know for like Jeopardy $800 question.
Right.
Okay.
Like live free or die is the motto of this state.
It also sounds like a Bon Jovi song.
True.
What's something that you can't get in Miami that you get up here, or the vice versa? What do you miss from Miami? Not family and friends, like, and not the beach. I'm talking about Miami subs. Like, what's the thing?
A public sub is definitely one that I do love a pub sub. In terms of the other way around, I have become obsessed with New Haven pizza. I eat New Haven pizza all the time.
Right,
and
we're gonna need you to leave.
Okay. Wait, you don't like New Haven pizza?
It's fine. It's fine.
Good pizza.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good. Best pizza, people freak out.
There are some people that say, yeah. I mean, I read an article in the Times about how like the New Haven pizza is like taking over or something.
Only
like that.
Only reads about
it's
pizza.
Super City. I'm just telling you.
You just made this article. I'm dead serious.
There was like this whole thing, like the New Haven pizza craze or something like that.
It's very good.
Like,
it's cola and it's very good. Do you have a favorite? Are you Pepe, Sally's, modern?
So I live right by a Sally's, so I've really come to enjoy that.
You're not
like
even going to the OG
lunch.
One? You're going to one of the chains?
Well, I mean...
How garbage is the pizza in Miami?
Honestly, like...
What next? You tell me you like Applebee's or Chili's?
No, it's to the point.
It's disgusting.
Honestly, it's like, it was to the point where... I didn't even consider, like, oh, what should I have for dinner tonight? I wouldn't even think of having pizza when I lived in Miami. Because there was nothing other than chains around me. And then you would, like, go out or whatever. But, like, I basically didn't eat pizza for several years until I moved here. And now, like, I have Sally's all the time.
Well, your mind's going to be blown when you eat pizza in New York if you're going
to
the chains.
By the way, I went with Stefano to a New York Rangers game, friend of the program, Stefano Fusaro.
New York Pizza Suprema?
Which one did... There's the one where there's fig on the pizza.
Oh, Lindestry.
Yeah, Lindestry. Yeah,
beautiful,
right? Fantastic.
Yeah, better than Connecticut.
Very good.
Okay. We're going to need this man off the show.
I have a feeling...
You pick a chain over Lindestry?
I mean, is Sally's a chain?
Yes, you did. You just said you went to the one near you in Stanford.
Right, but okay, but it originates in New Haven, and an hour south, you can get some pizza.
You think they brought the coal oven all the way to Stanford?
Okay. Why not get another coal oven?
They're not easy to get past.
Right. Anyway, Alexis knows it's ridiculous. Alexis has a coal oven guy.
I haven't done the pilgrimage to New Haven though, and actually like gone to the original locations.
At this point, I don't really care.
Okay, all right. We've spent way too much time badgering and interrogating Witty about pizza. We have to talk about the Europa League final. Atalanta.
Is your favorite burger McDonald's?
Atalanta. Defeats the unbeaten Bayer Leverkusen.
This was a wild one.
Ruining the storyline of their
Are we cool with that?
Season.
Are we happy about this?
No.
No.
Did anybody want this thing to not happen? Because I feel like
football
would lose something if a team could just go completely undefeated across all competitions.
I do think that there was a certain amount of people that came to know the Atalanta story by this final and can appreciate that it's a different thing. If it were a soulless club or some club that had, you know, like didn't really have some kind of emotional attachment, or some like Liverpool, for instance, that have won major European finals before, then I feel like no. But I do think that a number of people did learn about the Atalanta story. This is not a team that has ever been here before. They hadn't won a major trophy in 60 years. Gasperini has been an amazing coach for that team, and
he's
they play amazing stuff. Right, exactly, yeah. And so this is also a crowning achievement for them as much as it would have been a crowning achievement for Leverkusen. So I do think that there is at least a good story, but you do want to, as a sports fan, witness history. And we were two steps away from witnessing something that we will probably never witness again. A team in three competitions going unbeaten would be unlike anything we will ever see again. Yeah. And so there is something that's like, really, guys? And also, how many conversations do you have with your friends and go, man, this Leverkusen team, they're incredible. You've got to watch them.
I don't talk football with friends anymore because I talk about it for 14 hours.
good point.
But you're right. But if you did, it was the story every week.
Like it's in group text on this Leverkusen. Wow, amazing. Yeah. We do it on CBS all day. And so there might have been people that turned on Leverkusen for the first time this season and be like, the hell you guys been talking about? These guys suck.
Jeez.
Yeah.
They finished last in Serie A.
Look, watching the game a little bit more intently, I've probably watched maybe eight or nine Leverkusen matches. Europa, some Bundesliga throughout the season. And this one, I would argue that they were doing what they normally do. They were playing pretty kind of exciting football, and I love the patterns of play that Xabi Alonso has them playing. But Atalanta was just like, bro, we know exactly what you're gonna do. And the thing I was most impressed by wasn't even just the fact that the defending was and blocking passes and just getting two balls before Bayer Leverkusen players, but they were just physically manhandling Bayer Leverkusen, which
especially Florian Wirtz, bro.
Wirtz,
Granit Xhaka.
Granit Xhaka looked old for the first time this year.
Yeah, I mean, we're not used to Bayer Leverkusen, especially this year, making mistakes, and the mistakes is that the first two goals, Xhaka made didn't really control the ball. It was sort of a bad pass, but like he got nutmegged by Alamora Lookman.
Didn't Tapsoba get burned for all three goals? At least the first two.
I mean, the second one was more Xhaka on the initial movement. But yeah, I mean, Tapsoba could easily have closed him down. Yeah,
Tapsoba kept ushering him to his left, and he was like, oh, he's burning me with that. Let me go this way.
Yeah.
And then he burns him with the other leg.
Right.
Both legs?
Yeah. The third goal, you can understand, like, look, they're sending numbers forward. You can understand that one. But the first two in the first half is just
Palacios,
like,
in that first goal was horrendous.
Horrendous. Like, he was bad all match. In fact, Atalanta finished with less XG by a lot than if you scroll down, you can see it. Actually, it's right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at this, 0.85 to 0.68. I mean, that's 3-3 to nil. You know what I mean? It's crazy. When the stat that stands out to me the most, Ademola Lookman becomes the first African player to score a brace.
Mm-hmm.
That was obviously before the third goal, a brace in a European final. But also by the end of the match, he scored three goals. Two more than he scored his entire time at Everton.
I knew that was going to come up.
Isn't that crazy, man,
he couldn't get off the bench. Nobody believed in this kid. Lampard, whatever other manager we had at the time. And he's
Carlo Ancelotti?
Yeah.
Right, and he's gone through so many teams and managers.
And leagues.
And leagues, right. Yeah. And like he was one of those players that's always like a talent. You hear about this a player. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it was Kai Havertz until this season, where it's like, he is a talent, right? Mm-hmm. But when it actually comes down to performing well in games, or what exactly is it that you do here?
Yeah.
Lookman was one of those players where it's like, what do you do? Like, what are your skills? And yet, in this game, and really in this team for the last 2 years, and I think that's the biggest thing when people talk about the Gasperini story and the Atalanta story, is he does this with so many players. Mm-hmm. They sell them on, they bring new ones in, mm-hmm. and it's almost like it's like a perfect rehab cycle. If you're a down Premier League player who's not getting minutes or somewhere, this is the club you want to go to because he'll fix your career.
Right.
And then send you right back up. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Lookman got sold this summer and then just do it again.
Atalanta is the good luck Chuck of football.
Right.
You know what I mean? You remember the Dane Cook movie where if you dated him, the next person you ended up marrying?
Oh, okay. I don't remember, but I remember
that. Yeah, it's a solid premise, and the joke works.
Yeah,
for comedians. If you would have seen the movie.
For comedians, and this is a good suggestion for what you just did. For comedians, this would be like doing an open mic in another city, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm great. Early on, if my wife and I were traveling, I'd be like, I can't get on a show. I'd be like, oh, I'll do a quick open mic. And everyone's the worst comic you've ever seen because, you know, they do it once every 6 months, and you're doing it every night. You just can't find success in New York, and you're like, the greatest. People are high-fiving you as you get off. You're like, God damn, I feel good. But then you go back to your market, and you suck again for a couple more years. I felt bad for the story of Bayer Leverkusen, but like I said at the beginning of the segment, I kind of like the fact that football can't be defeated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kind of like that it's a puzzle you can't really solve.
Yeah. Well, and it's just because, like, for me, it's interesting in that exact respect when you compare Atalanta to what they did in the previous week in the Coppa Italia final, which is a game we had on CBS. They were horrendous.
Yeah.
They get classically Juve'd. They give up a goal in the fourth minute, and Juve was like, I dare you.
Yeah.
Like, go for it.
Their players were arms length away from each other. They were so tight.
For 90 minutes. For 90 whole minutes, they were like that. And Atalanta couldn't break them down. A week later, they look unbeatable. And that's like, that stuff where if you had said to me going into the game, how is Atalanta going to perform? I would have referenced they were really bad in the Coppa Italia final. I don't think they're a team for the big occasion. But every game's different, man. And you said it. Like, the way that Leverkusen were negated, and it's kind of underrated because it's not like Bielsa ball. Like, Gasperini doesn't have a blank ball like associated with him. Like, it's like the branding isn't good. But he does the exact system that Bielsa does. They're man-to-man. And so the reason why Leverkusen players have no space is because there's one shirt for one shirt. It's just on and on and on and on right through the pitch, and there is no space to play.
Bro, Coop Miners was on. So Florian Wirtz was checking his closet when he went home just to make sure Coop Miners wasn't there.
Yeah.
This dude was on him. I'm like, does he owe you money,
That's all 10 players on the field. I would argue they didn't have space.
There were so many fouls, especially in that first half, that I was surprised the yellows didn't come.
Whistle in his pocket for the majority of it.
It was one of those things where, did they not tell the Leverkusen players they should be fouling a little bit too?
Yeah,
like, have a little bit fun.
The
ref is letting you mix it up, and they did not take advantage of that.
Looks like they were on bitch o'clock. This is not going away. I love this. I hope you don't have to bleep all of these, Mike.
I do. Don't worry.
Oh, damn.
You know, so much work.
Only for DraftKings Network.
Audio listeners, you good, dude.
But no, just an impressive victory overall.
Can I give Gasperini some credit to start CDK, Scamacca, and Lookman at the same time?
Yeah.
And let Coop Miners sort of run in that number 10 spot and Ederson clean everything up behind him was a genius move.
Ederson was incredible.
He often doesn't start with all three at the top.
No.
And I thought this was great. And I know Scamacca people were like, he wasn't that active. He got an assist. He looked good. He was creating a lot of space. He kept everyone busy and really let Lookman go one-on-one, which is wild.
And to go into a game against Leverkusen where you know that their whole thing is they attack you and they create, like you say, and basically play four attackers in the game, it's mostly 3-4-3. It's Pašalić next to Ederson in that midfield, and then those front three create, and then they try and rotate the pieces. But in some ways, it was a tactic to try and win the game in the first hour, and they did it. They basically had the game won, and it was one of those things that was so weird because we have seen Leverkusen not be at their best through 45, through 60, through 75 minutes, but they always find a way.
Yeah.
It was odd for the first time this season to not even see them come close. You mentioned the XG and how small of a figure it was. They'd never turned on the Leverkusen gear.
No, never.
They have done it in literally every game this season.
They wouldn't let them.
Right.
Yeah. And Wirtz would get the ball. Wirtz likes to turn.
How many shots on goal did they even have? I can't even find it.
It was 10, I think, overall. I don't know how many shots were on target, but it couldn't have been that many. It was three on target, I guess. Yeah.
He really didn't. They really didn't bother the goalkeeper for Atalanta. Charlie mentioned that he thought Xabi Alonso should have made it like a change, a sub in the 30th minute when he realized stuff wasn't going well, and then started the conversation during the break. What would be of the sub you would have made? I would have taken Adli out and put in Boniface right at that moment.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he ended up coming on in the beginning of the second half, but
still wasn't enough.
But he's like. Xabi Alonso's trusted this team. And if you said right now, pick your best Bayer Leverkusen 11, I don't think that the team that started the Europa League final would be it.
100%.
But he trusts 18 guys,
yeah,
and any one of them can start the game, and you kind of pick the game plan around the game. But Boniface kind of fell out of the team after the Africa Cup of Nations.
Right.
He's got 25 goals this season.
Right.
It's about the tactics and how everything fits.
Yeah.
The one thing though that
but
I thought
for
him
or Sheik not to be the starter up top, right, was crazy.
Yeah, or at least like have him come on, and because he's come up with so many big late goals for them. But the thing that I like, and it's always funny because immediately we go to fraud alert. Like like you're always like not too far away from that, but I do kind of wonder now, he didn't take the Bayern job, he didn't take the Liverpool job, he's going to have to go again next season, because if all of a sudden they're Bayer Leverkusen again and finish eighth and go out in the group stage of the Champions League, like, this might be peak Xabi Alonso. This might be like as good as it ever gets, and now might be the downturn. We don't know.
Let's write the headlines.
Hold on a second, yeah.
Let's write the headlines now. Is Xabi Alonso the worst manager in world football?
Witty says Liverpool dodged a bullet.
Witty says Xabi Alonso's a fraud.
Okay, Mike, make the thumbnail. Get it ready.
Come on now.
Got the quote card all set.
Damn.
Okay, good. All right, we know how the internet works. We know what we're doing.
Sorry, Xabi Alonso. How's Saudi Arabia sound now? That's your only chance.
There is a certain, after the game, I saw the post-match interview, and Xabi Alonso, they asked him the question, like, is it a disappointment? He's like, yes, it is sad to lose, but I'm so proud of my players and what we've accomplished this year. And then we have another opportunity for the DFB Pokal this Saturday. My first thought is after watching Bayer Leverkusen and how they played, I'm like, did they celebrate a little too hard winning the Bundesliga?
I think that's, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. I mean, teams have celebrated and won stuff after that.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
But still, I mean, it is kind of wild to play unbeaten Bundesliga game, like the game at the weekend, on Sunday. So it's like you're going Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday.
Yeah.
And then you play a Europa League final and a cup final all in the same week.
It's crazy.
And that's like the push that this team has done. And to be fair, Atalanta have too, because they were also in a cup final and a domestic cup final last Wednesday. They've been playing Sunday, Thursday, Wednesday final, Sunday, Wednesday. So, I mean, they've been pushing. They also have two big games to go just to make sure that they kind of finish as well as they can in Serie A.
And I think if they finish in fifth, six teams get in the Champions League.
This is kind of the funny thing. Like, if you're Torino, you're hoping, if you're Roma. If you're Roma. The Serie A table. So, right. But it has to be exactly fifth. And so you kind of want Atalanta to be fully on the lash and just like be going nuts this weekend. And then by the time they play Sunday and they play Fiorentina on the final day, you need Bologna and Juve to win their final game. And you need Atalanta to drop some points here between now and the end of the season. If you're Roma, who are guaranteed sixth. So no matter what, Roma finished sixth and you need Atalanta to finish exactly fifth. If they finish fourth, then Roma don't make Champions League, and it would be whoever finishes fifth that makes Champions League. But
so if they finish fifth, six teams get into Champions League.
Yep.
It's crazy.
And if they finish fourth, then five teams make the Champions
League. That's a third of Serie A.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
They were talking about how the league is like financially strapped. You got to be good now, bro.
Right. This feels like, the teams that make it to MLS Cup playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's in Champions League.
And also, too, if Dortmund win the Champions League, then six teams from the Bundesliga will make it.
Yeah.
Right.
So in Serie A, if you just miss out on relegation, you're in the conference.
We'll see Empoli in the Conference League this year.
Crazy Napoli can't get into anything. They
I know.
10th? That's wild.
That is as disastrous of a title defense as it gets.
Jose Mourinho in Napoli would be vibes.
I mean, well, just the owner. Like, the owner is kind of one of the low-key characters in all of sports.
Of course.
He's an insane person.
Yeah, like De Laurentiis?
Yeah. I mean, he has no problem
voicing
any opinion.
Is he related to Giada?
Opinion.
He is related to Giada.
Is he?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, but he has, like, no problem having to go at anybody.
Yeah, no.
And, like, him, like, Jose Mourinho, like, doing a press conference is like, I need more money. I need more transfers. I need better players.
He'll walk in and grab a mic and be like, say it to my face.
Right.
Before we move on to we're going to talk Chelsea in a little bit, but since we're talking about Serie A, was it Inter Milan, the ownership?
Yeah,
they switched over. So what is it now? It's the Sunning Group loses out.
And an American venture firm has taken over. Yeah. But they're not a venture capital firm that's interested in owning sports teams. They just gave the Inter ownership a loan, and the collateral was the team.
Yeah, they defaulted on their loan.
Right, exactly. And so now this fund owns the team, and they're going to look to sell it. But what they come out and say is, we're not going to rush to sell this thing, because if you say to the market, hey, we want to get off this thing, then they're going to get cheaper bids. So, like, we're going to look for a good bid. If we have to own the team for a while, we'll own the team for a while. Right. But this is kind of a bizarre situation, because Inter should be ready to win 3 or 4 Scudettos in a row. And instead, they're now maybe in a situation where if they get locked up in figuring out money for Simone Inzaghi, for Lautaro Martinez, then they might not be in the position that they want to be in, because they might not have their best assets locked under contract because of the ownership situation. So this should be the period of prosperity, of stability. And the fact that they made a net profit in the transfer market last summer, they made net profits for multiple years in the transfer market, still won the league, and the ownership can't come up with the money. They must have been strapped.
Right.
Like, how they couldn't manage to put together the money that they need in order to pay off this loan is what? It's
368 million euros.
Yeah.
Bro, San Diego FC costs $500 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just a clear, like, there was a specific date that they had to pay the loan back.
And they just, like,
and they were like, oh,
they didn't know, like, if we don't answer the phone.
Ooh, lost track of time. Yeah. It's actually bitch o'clock over here. Yeah. I don't know why.
How dare you call me at this hour?
Asking me for money?
Wow. You don't respect this?
Sir, I'm with my bitches.
How dare you? They're very upset right now.
So just a wild turn of events. But we still got about 1 or 2 match days for some of the Serie A teams. Are you calling any? You call some Serie A?
So, yeah. So I usually do one on the weekend. But this weekend, because the big games are the relegation games and there are 3 of them, I think we're going to do kind of like a whip around thing more than a focus on a 1-game thing.
Oh, no.
So
okay.
They're all on Sunday at 2:45, I think.
Awesome.
So it's Frosinone, I think, against Empoli. Udinese still has something to play for. They're like all the teams down there, but they're all going to kick off at the same time. So we're going all in on the relegation race this weekend.
Awesome. Nice. So make sure you tune into that. All right, let's get to some Pochettino chat.
Mike, talk to me.
It's so crazy, because if you had asked me, how do you feel about Poch 2 weeks ago, I would have been like, get him out. Like, get him out. He doesn't have, like, the faith in the team. We're not going in the right direction. And over the last, I guess it's a little more than 2 weeks. To be fair, let's give him a month. We've looked like a completely different team. Cole Palmer, most goal contributions in the league. You know, Nani Madueke has looked a lot better. Nico Jackson is making more contributions. And it's just kind of crazy that as soon, but it's also very Chelsea, right? That as soon as things look like,
bro,
they're
two
going
episodes
in the right
ago,
direction,
this guy was like, I can't even recognize
I
this
was.
Team.
I was.
Well,
it was
just that Arsenal defeat, right? It was just the Arsenal defeat. And it's their only loss in their last 14 games of the season, but it was one game.
But
they just got systematically ripped apart.
If you look at this whole season, does Pochettino deserve to keep his job? If you look at the whole season.
Dude, we're about to be in the Europa League. We're about to be in Europa League. How could you say he doesn't? We're going to get Europe.
Okay, but do you not think that the ownership probably thinks that after spending $1 billion on a team that, hey, we got to the Europa League. That's not what this ownership group thinks that they were getting. Now, I think that's the ultimate gap to bridge, right? The gap to bridge is, well, what do you expect versus, well, what we expect is we paid a ton of money for all these players. Why aren't we better?
Actually, I think if you read into it a little more, in February, Pochettino came out and said, I don't know why this has become such a hot button topic, but he said, I don't want a set piece coach, and they've hired me a set piece coach. It's ridiculous. So, If you go into what the ownership wants, the ownership hired these 2 dudes from Brighton. I can't remember their names, but they, I believe
the
it was
entire
Brighton,
organization
no, Brighton
used
and
to
Monaco.
Work for Brighton.
Yeah, yeah. One guy basically.
Oh, Win Stanley is the co-sporting director.
And then the Monaco.
Yeah, and the dude from Monaco. And they're both big analytics people. They're huge analytics people. This is XG's moment, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
We're having a moment. Yeah. I'm all about it. I love it. I happen to love analytics and data and stats. I love all of that. So they want to bring in people that are going to build a system similar to what Brighton has, but also similar to what, you know, Liverpool has done and similar to what some major – Pep uses this stuff. There's so many ways that this could be used, and they want to bring Chelsea into the future, right? Modern football.
Well,
and Pochettino was like, I don't want none of that.
Right.
If I see one spreadsheet, I might burn something, you know?
And I think – to me, the way that I think about it is you look at the owner of Chelsea and the owner of Liverpool, they have also had success in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the model for baseball. The model for baseball is... Right, but even beyond that, it's all the decisions get made above the manager, and the manager's job is to get in the dugout, put a ridiculous uniform on, and follow the orders of the people above him.
Right.
No, don't go out and do your own thing.
But that's also modern football.
We've put together the... But like...
Mikel Arteta was hired as a head coach. He's got to do... You work in unison.
You work in unison. But I think like the balance... the way that it used to be was it was manager 100, club 0.
I'd argue very strongly that we need to move away from the omnipotent meester, you know, the guy who handles everything from
but if you're Poch, like Poch is very clearly in the past had roles where that's not him. And if you hire, like, you're probably at this moment in time before the adjustment has happened. We're watching the adjustment happen in front of our eyes. I don't think you're going to get the best coaches that way. Because the best coaches want more power. If you're Pep Guardiola and you're walking into Chelsea right now, do you walk in and go, yeah, please give me all your coaches that you've hired for me? Do you go, no, here are my 15 people, you got to hire them, and I want these three players this summer?
Here's the only way I'm going to disagree with you is you said you're not going to find the best coaches. I think you'll find the best coach. You just won't find the best manager.
Okay,
because if you want to be a manager and you want to have complete autonomy over every choice, one, I think we need to move past that. I think we've seen some wonderful examples of that. The Sir Alex Ferguson, right? The Arsene Wengers. We've seen some amazing examples of that. The game has moved on.
I agree.
If every major club is using data to beat you at every step, I can't wait for one guy to make every decision.
But at this moment, we define the best coaches or the best managers, whatever you want to call them, as the ones that have gone out, gotten the results, right? Ancelotti, Pep Guardiola, Mourinho, Conte, all these guys that, like, there are cult of personalities, Jurgen Klopp, they're cult of personalities where they define the club and everything comes to them. And now you're going to this different model. And I agree with you.
I think Klopp isn't one of those guys, by the way.
They have a robust data
department.
Jurgen had his yes man running the sport, like the sporting operation at Liverpool by the end. And now, coincidentally,
how many
the
titles
people,
did they win during that?
Okay, but okay. I mean, you know, they've had their success. They won
the league when they followed the data, the metrics.
Okay.
Right. But either way, I think until then, you're going, like, the quality of coach, and this is why if you're a Chelsea fan, I understand being underwhelmed. Right now, you look at the names that are linked, it's the two guys that were promoted from the championship this year. Mm-hmm. Enzo Maresca and Kieran McKenna, who is like an up-and-coming coaching whatever.
Enzo Maresca from the Pep Guardiola.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But like, you're not going out and getting the best guys right now. Because if you're coming to them and saying, these are the parameters, a lot of right now, who we would define right now to be the best coaches wouldn't want those jobs. I think as much as normally the phrase by mutual consent gets thrown around and we say, you actually got fired, I actually think Poch might have been like, I'm sorry, guys. I really don't want to deal with this
exactly
anymore. I don't want to deal with this anymore.
I think Poch is like, bro, these ain't my vibes, bro.
Right.
And honestly, I think he walks directly into the Manchester United job.
I completely agree with that, too.
I think he walks right into it, and it's a great fit for him. And honestly, I think this is a great move for Chelsea as a football club, because I do think you need to advance. You need to move into the future. And I agree with you that the generation of quote-unquote great managers, I think we're seeing the end of it. I think Klopp is the first sort of a chip to fall, whatever the term is. I think from now on, we're going to start to see that style of management, the Ancelotti's, the Peps, kind of go away. And I think you're going to see much more done by committee, even more committee than Klopp did.
I would argue that Mourinho was the first chip to fall or domino to fall, I suppose.
Because if you look at
the quality of jobs that a man with his resume should be getting, part of that is style of play, right? Part of that is
you want the media.
Right, exactly. But like Mourinho with his CV should be getting big jobs.
Yeah.
But right now the last link was Beşiktaş in Turkey, who are 40 points off the pace at the top of the Turkish Super League or international jobs, which might be another one for this kind of, you know, bygone, soon to be bygone style of coach. But yeah, I think that Conte has gone a little bit of a while here since Tottenham without getting a job. We'll see if a Serie A club goes for him this summer. But yeah, I think there are a few managers that are in that realm that should be, in theory, but right now aren't working well with this new era. And everyone's making fun of Bayern for the fact that Bayern couldn't get one of these guys to come. But I think Bayern is another one of those clubs that's like, these are the parameters that you work in. And you look at Ranić said no, and Nagelsmann said no, and Flick said no, and all these guys have said no.
What, do you want to be another one that wins the Bundesliga, or do you want to go create your own path like right. Xabi Alonso did, which I think will happen. But I'm looking at all these clubs, and I'm looking at, well, who are the managers that we're all talking about now? We're talking about your Andoni Iraolas. We're talking about your Ole Glasner, who I think is going to have an incredible season next year. You're talking about Amorim in Sporting, who is probably closer to what you're talking about.
Sure.
He wants the full control. But we're talking about young, influential managers who I think, given these massive paychecks you're only going to get in the Premier League because they have all of the TV money and no one even comes close to what they can pay, given an opportunity, you're going to get one of those managers and be like, all right, yeah, I think I can handle this. And the history of Chelsea is to fire every manager after 18 months anyway. Right. So if you're there for 2 years, you've already done better than most, man. You did a good job.
I was going to say, does that not deter a lot of like even these younger guys from wanting the job? Because even Poch, because I just want to say one thing you said, Woody, is that you didn't think the ownership wants like they want to win now. They were the ones who have been throwing out the word project for years. Since Todd Bowley's took over, he said, I want to build a project here.
But then you start to lose. That's the thing. Anyone can say that. But once you start to lose, it's over.
And they actually want to do the Michelin model, which they have. Do you know the Michelin model? They don't follow the league table. They have something called the Table of Justice, which is just a terrible name for what I'm about to say next. It does sound like it sounds like the dollar store like comic book your mother got you when everyone else was like Spider-Man out.
It just sounds like there's a hammer on this Table of Justice. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's my mother's chancleta. She's like, welcome to the Table of Justice. Now, did you or did you not clean your room? We're about to find out.
What is this report card in my hand?
Yeah. I don't see a lot of A's after your name, bro. It's the only one I see. Your name should be Blexus, bro. Or Clexus. Or really Delexus, if I'm really being honest. But it's called the Table of Justice, and all they care about is XG. Do we create the most chances and the best chances as a club? Because the whole thing is you can really only teach your team how to create the most and the best chances in front of goal. It's up to the players to be able to execute that, right? So are we winning on XG? And that's all they care about. And I think Chelsea wants to go that model. And do you have any idea the joy I have in how much this upsets British fans? Oh, my God. Because they want the one guy.
No, but I also get, like, to your point, and Poch came out and said that, it does kind of leave a little bit. Well, then, like, why can't you coach Nico Jackson to finish? Because, the biggest underperformance is they would create, and they gave away a ton of goals last season. Yeah. And Chelsea are kind of one of the few clubs you can kind of get away without playing with style because their fans are just like, we just want to win.
Yeah, we don't care.
Yeah. And they gave away 63 Premier League goals this season.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
That's an insane amount. They're like the softest center. The second, like the easiest live bet in the world was betting the next team, their opponent to score when they scored first. It was the easiest bet in the world this year.
Why didn't anyone tell us? These damn parlays would have been so much easier.
But like that whole... The softness of their team, the way they gave up goals, and you go to the stadium and like, okay, great, we're winning the Table of Justice, but I'm sitting here at Stamford Bridge and we're not winning. So what do I care if we're winning the Table of Justice?
Because that does generally equate to wins.
Right, and I think in the longer term, I think next season, I would have probably picked Chelsea to finish third if Pochettino stayed. We'll see what Kieran McKenna or whoever comes in and does.
Feels like Roberto De Zerbi would be perfect, but to give Mike some credit, The owner, Todd Bowley actually wanted Pochettino to stay. It's the other owners who are much more, Clear Lake, the actual real owners. Todd Bowley's the face. He's a minority owner. Clear Lake is like, no, we're the big boys. We don't care what you think, Todd Bowley. Right, yeah. So everybody hates Todd Bowley. The fans, even the owners, they didn't want him because he didn't want to be a part of the process.
Right.
And they're the ones who say, like, we don't need to win. We don't need to win next year. We don't need to win Pochettino right away to play ball.
With their plans. And sort of the conversations about this sort of changing of like the perception of managers. Obviously, there is like an old guard that we're sort of used to. The Sir Alex Ferguson's was an example. But I wanted to just show this clip real quick because this is Gary Neville talking to on their show on The Overlap. Talking about, is it The Overlap? I forgot what.
I believe it is. Stick to football.
And this is them discussing, Roy Keane is asking Gary Neville, why do you, because apparently Gary Neville still calls Sir Alex Ferguson boss.
And Roy Keane absolutely hates Sir Alex Ferguson.
That's my favorite part of that show is just the dripping hatred that he has for this man.
I think it's a funny conversation. Yeah. So I just want to play a little bit of it.
Hey, why do you call him the boss?
You've asked me this about four times in the last 12 months.
Why do you, isn't he was your manager at a football club. His contract was with the club, and your contract was with the club. Why are you calling someone boss? Are you serious? Do you call anyone else boss besides your wife?
I just
do you call anybody else boss?
I told you this. I still call the school teacher that I was brought through as Mr.
Yeah,
Wright.
Yeah, Mr. That's fine, but you're not calling him boss.
You've been used to calling someone that for like 25
years.
Yeah,
because that was your circumstances. That was the club you were in.
We have had this debate before, the conversation before,
yeah.
Haven't we? We have.
I don't get it. Not just you, everyone. Boss, I don't get it.
Would you feel strange calling him Alex if you saw him?
I would never call him Alex.
Is him Sir Alex?
That's his name.
I would never call him Sir Alex.
But that's his name.
I would call him Sir Alex publicly. I would never call him Alex. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
For 25 years, I called him boss, and then you just make, is that law?
Because he's your boss.
I don't call any of the guys.
He's not your boss now, is he?
No,
he's another human being. He's a, that's it.
Yeah.
Why are you calling him boss?
No, I even call Glenn Hoddle gaffer. I call Steve Coppell. Boss.
Yeah, I don't think it's a.
Yeah. Arsene Wenger.
You call every gaffer you've ever had gaffer.
Yeah, I still call him boss.
So even Ian Wright is. There's something to that admiration, that respect of there's a certain. Just a respect for authority that I don't think sort of exists with managers nowadays to this degree, where even, like Gary Neville just being like, I can't even call him Alex. It's just, it is impossible for me to do that because I see him as this unbelievable, like, figure in my mind.
There is a romanticism around Sir Alex Ferguson, which I think he's earned, right?
That's what I'm saying.
And I think there's a romanticism about managers, right? Mm. Even like we saw with Jurgen Klopp this weekend as he was leaving, the reverence that Liverpool fans have for him would suggest that he is almost an almighty figure at this club. He was the one man. And that's like the one thing that the era of football that you're talking about, which is that things are going to change. I do think that is Arne Slot going to be revered by the Liverpool fans? Is he going to be a galvanizing figure? And I think that's kind of what a lot of fans want, is that one figure. It's like, all right, this is our guy. Like we're gathering around this guy.
Yeah, the
and
army like, wants a general.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel like in this new era that we're talking about, is the general the sporting director? Let's all like. Here's the guy that's sitting in a boardroom somewhere picking some players. That's our guy.
I'm fine with that.
I love me.
I love
there's
me.
Something
a suit,
about, there's something about the romanticism of football that like we want like you want someone to believe in, to back, to, you know, Arsene Wenger, to, you know, Bill Shankly and Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola and all these guys. You know, there is a cult of personality that is absolutely a part of the game.
Especially in England.
Yeah.
Where
for sure.
It feels like that is the way they view the game involves these historical figures, you know, like, and people like the eras for Chelsea, mm-hmm. the Mourinho era, mm-hmm. the Conte era, you know, there the eras exist. And for me as an Arsenal fan, it's kind of hard because Wenger dominated so much, such a big era. Ain't nobody talking about the Freddie Ljungberg era.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right. I've been seeing since Jurgen Klopp is obviously leaving or left already, I've been seeing like parents post videos of them telling their young children that Jurgen Klopp is leaving and them just bawling and crying. And it's part of it is like, wow, what a feeling that the kid is just like, he can't believe that the only manager he's probably ever known for his club is leaving. And then it's also like, yo, if you're a parent, why are you posting this shit, bro? Yeah. Like, this is crazy.
Well, more, it's like, or it's, I mean, obviously, like, the kid has to be imparted, like, some sense of, like, this is the guy.
Yeah,
this
is
the hero. So, like that folklore
it's
is
projecting.
Built by...
Right. They're crying because the dad can't. Because it's toxic. It's a toxic masculinity thing. We had this conversation. I don't know if you heard. Jurgen Klopp is not done at Anfield. He's going back for one more thing. Do you guys know what it is?
I don't know.
It's a Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, okay.
Which brought the question, who's more famous in Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp or Taylor Swift?
I mean...
It'd have to be Jurgen Klopp.
I feel like it might be 50-50.
No, there has to be times... Taylor Swift could walk through Liverpool, I think, a little bit more comfortably.
Nah, you bugging.
No, I don't think Taylor Swift could walk through anywhere comfortably.
Yeah, no, you bugging. I don't think anybody walks through Liverpool comfortably. Unless you have a pocket knife. I don't think anybody is walking through Liverpool comfortably. let's start there.
Okay, I don't know.
Taylor Swift.
I mean, look, I'm not a Taylor. I'm not a Swifty.
I'm not either. That's we're three non Swifties,
right?
And a half.
Nah, you know, it exists. It's not for me.
It exists. I want every Taylor Swift fan out there to know the thoughts provided by witty, or simply just witty.
Would he just crush Lindustry Pizza and Taylor Swift?
Though? He's out of here. I didn't crush Lindustry Pizza. I said it was great.
You preferred a chain. No,
I did not say I
you
preferred it.
You hesitated and said
I didn't
good.
Say I preferred it. Frankly, I was trying to needle you, but like more importantly, like it's incredible pizza.
Yeah, of course.
But like, I don't know.
Better than any chain you've ever been
I've
to.
I've never had like a slice of pizza and gone like, wow, oh my God, that's incredible.
That's the wrong way to double down on that, by the way, because I do that a lot of times in my life.
Pizza's just a solid 8.5 out of 10 every time you have it.
That's ridiculous. absolutely ridiculous. You got to go to like, oh, you got to go to the Midwest. And you'll be like, forget that 8.5.
Yeah, oh,
yeah, I think
that's
we've
true.
Hit it 5.8.
That is true. I mean, I did, yeah, Miami, some Miami pizza.
If you're listening or watching, let us know. Swift or Klopp?
Yeah.
Who's bigger in Liverpool?
But, you know, just the way Juju on Levitard, put the poll up, Juju. Yeah. Mike, put the poll up.
I'll put a poll up. Yeah, I'll put a poll up after the episode, and we'll see how it goes.
We gotta throw this on Twitter. See who's more famous in Liverpool.
In Liverpool, yeah, okay. That's a fair
I honestly think
only
it's like 48-52.
From Liverpool. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to verify each piece.
I just feel like...
Throw your zip code in there, your postcode.
Klopp covers every demographic in Liverpool. I don't think that Taylor Swift does. I don't think like That's Taylor Swift's getting like men
this
over
This conversation
45.
Is, do more men in Liverpool like Taylor
right.
Swift versus
exactly.
more women like Klopp?
Right.
That's
right.
the real argument.
Right.
And also children.
Fair. Yeah, I mean, some of them are crying over his departure. So
right, and I'm sure no kid has ever cried over Taylor Swift.
That's a good point.
Come on.
Okay, I want to get to this before we...
Who thinks more famous in Puerto Rico? Klopp?
Klopp or Bad Bunny?
Imagine Klopp wins that.
I want to get to this, and I don't know if you're terminally online like we are in American soccer Twitter. There is a new supporters group that is making waves. Their name is States United, and they did a promo video. I'll play just a second of it. It's pretty awful overall. And I just want to preface this. I'm not necessarily here to trash on any particular person.
First of all, the growing of the sport is great.
Lovely.
This is important. This was our this was our mission.
So I realize you guys are politicians.
Yeah.
What are you guys running for right now?
Shut his mic off.
That's just a general, like, we don't, as much as people may think this because we're comedians, we're not generally here to speak. A bunch of vitriol and be like really angry. We're here to have a good time.
Jocks.
But this is, we have our values and morals and this.
It's very clear
exactly.
who we are and where we sit on the fence.
So this, States United is a supporters group that is promoting itself as an apolitical, no politics. We don't want to hear all this mess about blah and blah. They don't want anything sort of involved. So this was
which on its face doesn't sound like a terrible idea. All right, you know what? We're going to have a group of people. Let's just not boggle it down with politics. We're like, okay. Not the worst thing I've ever
not
heard.
Not the worst. I mean, if it's Thanksgiving dinner, I get it. But
yeah. Anytime I'm with my in-laws, I'm like, guess what? I'm now States United. I don't want to hear what you got to think.
But that's it. So we'll play a couple seconds of it.
Have you seen the support at U.S. soccer matches? Ever wanted to get more involved without having to pay for membership premiums? I've got the solution for you. States United is the newest U.S. soccer supporters group looking to bring the change that American supporter culture needs, not just looking forward to the Copa America and Gold Cup, but also to the World Cup that we host here at home in 2026. We at States United recognize that for most people in this country, sport is their safe space. We also know that you don't want to bring the outside world in. We are committed to keeping the outside world out. States United is built on a culture of being active and supporting our boys in the red, white, and blue. No political movements and no bureaucracy.
Okay, let's stop it there.
Wait, can you go back to the first line?
Sure.
Have you seen the sport at U.S. soccer matches? Ever wanted to get more
involved?
Okay,
I thought he said, have you ever seen the sport? U.S. soccer matches. I was like, who wrote this? AI?
It also, it's out of sync. It sounds like it was, like, there's a voiceover. Like, maybe it was recorded, and then he re-recorded it. Mm. Because
he's dubbing himself.
Dubbing himself, because maybe there was sound or something. I don't know.
Or maybe the editor at the Federalist Society didn't like this.
First impressions is this is a truly awful idea, mainly because... if you look at the comments, some of the comments are you know, criticizing it. Some of the comments are like, oh, this is great. We should keep politics out of sports and blah, blah, blah. And then you click on that person's name, and then it's literally like Marjorie Taylor Greene retweets and, yeah. and Lauren Boebert. And it's like, no politics. People who spout a culture of no politics are... It's the worst politics.
Well, this is
it's
why really... it seems like a good idea if you don't know what this stands for.
Right, right, right.
If you say like no politics, you're like, oh, maybe that means no bad politics. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna have to be bothered by that.
It's a
you're
dog
like,
oh, whistle.
Okay, exactly. But then you click on it and you're like, I think I'm the only one here that doesn't wear sunglasses on the back of my neck. You know? I'm the only one here that doesn't rant into my phone in my car.
And
you know?
I've already seen a lot of discourse. Like the post on Twitter has already 173 comments.
Yeah, a little ratio here. 322 quotes.
And then look, some of the people are like, "Can I bring my Trump flag?" And he's like, "Nah, man, that'll just be like a device." People just get upset, and it's like it's not about. Any values or morals about like that the you know people say like can I bring a pride flag and they're like no we don't want politics and it's like all right you don't want to accept certain human beings that's right. really all you're kind of saying and the dude is wearing an LAFC shirt. LAFC fans are furious that
this is the representation. Yeah.
And it's so in general, look, I don't know who this kid is. I assume he's working for some Republican goddamn politician or something like that.
Yeah.
But in general, it's lame. It's boring. It's like it's clearly we know what you're trying to do. As much as people may say like, oh yeah, no, this is like the safe space. Like we're trying to keep the world the world outside of the sport. It's like that's literally never been the case ever. There's no.
Never.
Sports is not a safe space from political opinions that you do not like.
Right. St. Pauli exists and Lazio exists. And there's a lot in the middle between right. the two.
That is the ideological spectrum of football. Yeah. yeah.
It's you there on the edges, and then there's a lot of people, and then you can pick which way or where you
there's
are.
There's a chart. Have you seen this chart?
Yes.
I don't have it in front, but it's basically
what's the chart called where it's like the in the middle, and then you're either on.
The Venn diagram?
No, it's like the quadrants.
It's a quadrant. It's like the four quadrants of
like this to the left, to the right, and then I forget what the top.
It's like a T-chart or something.
Yeah. It's either sort of like socialist or more capitalist or something. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this is overall. This is just a. Like I said, like a sort of a dog whistle, and it's just kind of annoying. But it's interestingly enough, the when you look at who is following this supporters group, the only person that is like a person in our sort of community that we see that follows is Alexi Lalas of all people, and this is just not much of a shock. But it's just it's a thing that is. Annoying more than anything. It's just like just really dumb, and I don't even see how it can work.
I also think, unfortunately, stuff like this comes with the sport getting even more popular.
Okay,
you know, and as the World Cup comes, there's going to be more and more things that pop up like this that I have no desire to be a part of. That
right.
I'm glad that I'm sure there's some people that will join that maybe I might agree with and we might agree with, but like maybe they just want to enjoy the sport, much like they're at a Knicks game or something. I just don't think it's part and parcel with the game of soccer. I think soccer inherently is you make a choice when you're in a supporters group what the ethos of the fans are, what the ethos of the club are. If that's kind of part and parcel with a club that is a part of a community, and if the clubs are to be that still.
And
to
you're under no obligation
community.
To join a supporters group.
None,
you can just
none
buy
at all.
A ticket. It's in the stands and root for the US of
Do
A.
Your own
like,
chance.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
but even
like, yo, Dan is really getting these chances.
Yo, is he freestyling?
Yeah. Bro, no beat, no stylist, bro. He's out there.
I was ready. I mean, like, there is support group beef every once in a while where it's like, this one group thinks that we should be doing this, mm-hmm. and this group thinks we should be doing that.
You know when we saw that? When NYCFC first started, there was like 8 supporters groups, and they're these guys, I forgot they were called like Hearts of Oak, and they just wanted to... They wanted to be so old school British, man. They just wanted sarcastic chants. And then, can we turn those loud drums down? And then you got the Templados, which are like straight Southern South American, just banging
that
on drums.
That happened with Miami, too. The one that won out is kind of the one that is like the most seen, which is Vice City 1896. But that like there was like a group that wanted to do almost like traditional football chants, and they're like, well, it's Miami, so we got to get like the percussion section out.
Wasn't
and
there like the sound Miami sound machine or something like that? Wasn't there one of those?
Was that Gloria Stefan?
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't there one that like took that kind of?
Oh no, I didn't realize.
Yeah, I mean, like they have like a whole percussion section, and it sounds like a South American atmosphere. Like that's the direction that they went in. So you're right. Like every club has its own thing, and you can choose to participate it or not. But to your point, the one thing that we've learned in the last 8 years is that there is no opting out of politics. Yeah. Like
it's impossible.
Right. And I think this has always been the case. We were just blind to it, right? We were blind to the way in which, you know, people either on one ideological spectrum or the other were bringing flags in or were taking on a culture that was political inherently. Everything is political.
Right.
Because not 100% of people agree with anything. And so when you make a decision about how you're representing yourself, it, you know, even the notion of, let's say, having cheerleaders at a game is a kind of a political decision, because you're making a decision that to try and appease a certain population as opposed to another, right? And so any decision that you make is inherently political. And so, yeah, if gay people show up to a game and want to show off their pride flag, then they should be more than welcome in any atmosphere to do so.
Who cares?
So you're saying, you're being inherently exclusionary by not allowing people.
Right.
And is that what you want to represent?
Right.
As a country, as a supporters group, as in anything, is you're excluding people on the basis of what they believe and what they want to demonstrate about themselves.
Right.
It's dumb. It's impossible to do something without any politics. Like, you know, if they have like, if somebody sees a puppy and they're like, oh, what a cute puppy. Someone puts a hand around you. I'm sorry, we're also, we can't like puppies in this system. You gotta leave. But it doesn't make sense.
And especially when we're talking about international sporting events.
Yeah.
We're talking about countries playing each other. Right. Every country takes to the field with its history onto the pitch. And supporters groups inhabit the history. Like you will see this summer at the Euros held in Germany chants about World War II, because that's just what happens.
Exactly.
And that's the case with every country that's playing in sports.
I just love, keep politics out of sports. Then if he was like, yeah, stop doing the national anthem at games, I'd be like, okay, this dude is cooking, right?
right.
That is really standing on business.
I get asked that all the time when I'm in Europe. Do you guys do this before every event? Yeah, it's not like we found out you were coming and decided to put on a show. Like,
yeah.
Well, Dan is going to be at the Knicks game. Fellas, get the planes to do a flyover.
The one that most got me was the NFL draft having the national anthem played before him. They're about to read names off a card for 5 hours. Let's play the anthem.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, come on.
Bro.
Like, it doesn't need to be played before everyone.
Bro. Especially when you have like I went to a Brooklyn Nets versus Toronto Raptors game, and they have to do both.
Oh, yeah,
they're
doing both, yeah. That happens, by the way, with MLS games. Yeah, actually, weirdly, it affects our rundown because we generally cover the national anthem. Like, you know, you normally won't see it on the broadcast. And because the Canadian anthem is, like, having two anthems, we have to do, like, a super short first segment and run, like, six minutes of commercials and then come back for the start of the game. So
it's crazy.
Actually, like, on a TV basis, whenever there's U.S. against American or U.S. against Canadian teams, there's, like, a slight difference with how we do it.
Actually, you're here now. Why don't the kick time, why isn't that the start time of the match, the actual start time of the match for MLS?
I mean, this has always been the case.
I don't know. I do presume it's a television thing.
Don't lie on this show. Why can't we just pick that? The first kick.
There's a pregame segment we got to do.
Buddy, you show up early for it. If you say 7:30, get the ball at 7:30. I want to hear a whistle at 7:30.
I mean, there are other sports that are bigger offenders. I think it's only because we have the perspective of you watch the Europa League final and it kicks off at 3-0-0-0-0.
Every game kicks off.
Yeah. In United States, it's a very popular thing. You watch like a 7 o'clock TNT NBA game tips off at 7:19. It's a regular thing.
I wouldn't mind if you on TV, like when, in CBS, when we say tonight, don't worry, you know,
coverage
like,
begins.
Coverage begins. But for FOTMOB and One Football and all these other apps, or even just when you Google the team name and it pops up and it says 3 o'clock, and I hurry up, I pinch a loaf or whatever I do, I hustle over to the couch, I hit the button, and I'm watching you for 17 minutes. Yeah.
Well, it's okay. So can I tell you though the math for MLS is +10.
Okay.
So whatever the list of time is, +10.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. Right. Watch the pregame show.
I also
realize you got 10 minutes buffer.
I love hearing witty pregame, so I do not have the same complaint as Alexis.
Me neither.
Thank you,
I'm
Christian.
Look, you know what the problem is? I actually get there 10 minutes early. So now I got 20 minutes from
Yeah, but also, there. I mean, if you're going to the game, then you can't really watch the pregame.
Yeah.
You're just like, wait, how come the game hasn't started yet?
Bro. Keep the politics in the game. Get rid of that.
Okay. Witty, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, gents.
For hanging out with us. This has been great as always. Make sure, Witty, the last few months especially, you've been calling some just tremendous games, great calls alongside Ray Hudson or whoever you're working alongside. And it's just been great and proud of us to see your growth in this space and becoming a more just a household voice for a lot of people. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the last few months have been wild. But, yeah, I mean, Champions League City, I'll be on the Conference League final for CBS and Paramount Plus alongside Matteo Bonetti and Mike Grella. So that'll be a really fun one. And, yeah, I'm long overdue a vacation.
And
the end of the European season for me is like, all right, I'll see you guys later. I'll be back in a week.
I love the combo of you and Ray Hudson together.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Ray is the best, man. Like, really it honestly is like such a treat to just watch him. The craziest thing that I'll give you guys some insight into is like the one thing you don't realize because it seems so fun and it is fun, but the way that he stares at the screen and like the intensity, like the muscles in his neck are bulging. He is beet red as he's doing 90 seconds of a replay, going nuts. Like he is as into it as any commentator I've ever worked with in my life. He is 100% engaged in this thing that he is doing and it comes off as so fun, but like you see him after, he's like, whew. Like he actually he lets out a deep breath. Like
he put
is
in
like
a shift.
He put in a real shift for it.
Yeah. I know there are sometimes he'll make he'll do some of his metaphors and analogies, and I can just hear you like you can't you don't want to laugh.
Yeah. Right.
You try to hold
but
it
I do want to sell them though. I do want to give like a little laugh though because I always watching it down the years. I was like, guys, this is hilarious.
It's
like, how are you? How are you not acknowledging the fact that what he said? And everyone in the audience. And the funniest thing is like because Champions League is just an inherently bigger thing. You look at the YouTube comments or someone who just like is watching a game because they're watching a game or maybe their team is playing in a Champions League semifinal like Borussia Dortmund, right? You wouldn't have called a big Borussia Dortmund game before. So like you're watching this going, who is it? Like people are still being introduced to Ray Hudson
his style
of commentating. But yeah, I mean, everyone in the audience is going, what did he just say?
Yeah.
And like, so you like you want to give it a laugh. Yeah. It's brilliant.
He says things like of orgasmic proportions. Yeah, and I'm like, bro, I get yelled at on Morning Football. This guy's cooking.
Ray Hudson can do whatever he wants. Is there any favorite Ray Hudson quote that you remember working alongside him?
Yeah.
Maybe there's any that come out.
There's like quite a few. Stretch like spandex on Miami Beach is a personal favorite.
You gotcha.
Cool, even though he had a lobster down his shorts.
Jesus.
Rose like a salmon out of a fresh summer stream.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, like by the end of it, like you know the hit. He's off like a jackrabbit on a hot date.
Yeah. My favorite of his was he could pass a beer from a pint glass into a shot glass from across the bar.
Doesn't make any sense, and yet I know exactly what it means. We need a Ray Hudson children's book.
Oh, my God.
That's a great show.
That would be...
The audio book of that would be amazing.
Yes.
Love that.
Can I just get Ray Hudson reading Moby Dick? I'll listen to that.
Witty, go make sure if you're tuning in.
Where can people follow you?
At Chris Whittingham, Instagram and Twitter.
Yes, yes,
yes.
And also, I know you guys will be concerned about this. I'll be on the New York City at New England match this weekend.
Hey, so very nice.
Be, okay. People watch New York City this
you
weekend.
You versus Charlie.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And the home radio option is available. So if you do want to watch with
Chuck,
you can do. But
all right, yeah,
you stick with the English broadcast.
You've called a couple of matches at Yankee Stadium. It's always nice to hear your voice there. Nice familiar voice. So, all right.
Go to his socials. Let him know what you think about chain pizza because the man doesn't know what he's doing.
Chain pizza.
Man's eating at Applebee's and Chili's.
Come on. Five Guys Burger is great, then. I'm kidding.
Not really. I'll allow that.
So at Chris Whittingham, make sure you follow us. At Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/soccercooligans for some exclusive content there as well. And we'll see you, what's today? Thursday?
No we'll episode. So yeah, real quick, no episode Monday for Memorial Day.
That's right. So we'll be back next week on Thursday. And we have a co-host. You're going to be away.
Yeah, I will be gone.
Away.
I'm on my way to the Champions League final.
That's right. Yeah, we can announce that. Alexis is going to the Champions League final.
Yeah. Good Lord, man. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
He will be there.
You've had a few European trips this year, haven't you?
That's my second Champions League final in a row. It's pretty crazy. Probably the last one. They're like, we're not going to do this ever.
All right. So, all right. We'll see you next week, everybody. Enjoy Memorial Day, and we'll see you in a week. Cheers, everybody.
Love you guys.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.